and you're listening to WHUS 91.7 FM. I am Fran Storch, and you are listening to Radio Naturopath, and you will be listening to Radio Naturopath for the next hour. This is Radio Naturopath. It is the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I'm Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, and if you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can call us at 486-9487. That's 860-486-9487, although right now I am without a co-host, so it will be harder for me to answer the phone. You can text us at 860-486-9487. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com, and I've got my email up, so I will see that. If you'd like to listen to this show in another time, you can check out our podcast at www.whus.org. Go to the talk header and click on Radio Naturopath. You can also check out my Facebook page, Fran Storch ND, Naturopathic Physician, Radio Naturopath. And also, I'm on Twitter and Instagram, at Fran Storch ND. All right, so we have a nice show for you today. We've already had a call-in. So big shout-out to Chuck and Michelle, who are in Tolland, and they have a question about diverticulitis. What is it, and what do you do about it? Ouch! I can tell you the diverticulitis is not a lot of fun. It is painful. One of the things that is very interesting is I have been seeing a rash, if that's an appropriate word. I have been seeing a lot of people, and higher than I would expect, number of people coming in who have persistent diarrhea. It's very strange that they'll, and it seems to be for different reasons. Some of them, it seems like they haven't nailed down their food intolerances. Some of them, it seems like they had some kind of an illness where they had an acute gastrointestinal upset. And then they have this refractory inflammation that persists even after the gastrointestinal upset is over. Some of them, it's because they just took a lot of antibiotics. They went through an antibiotic course, and then they got dysbiosis, and the dysbiosis just won't undo itself. And I'm seeing people who are having diarrhea where they're going to the bathroom 5 to 12 times a day, and they come into me because they've been to the MD already, and it really hasn't helped. And it's very concerning. So first, let's start with the diverticulitis specifically and what that is. So diverticulosis is different than diverticulitis, only in that if you have diverticulitis, you have diverticulosis, not necessarily the other way around. When you hear osis just means you have a condition. Itis means that you have inflammation. So diverticulosis is an interesting condition. It tends to occur in the latter part of the large intestine. So we're talking about the sigmoid colon and the rectum. That would be your descending colon. So it's on the part of your colon that's on the left side of your body, and it's where stool travels to before it comes out. You'll tend to get it there more likely than in the in the right-hand side, where the ascending and transverse colon, simply because when food comes through your small intestine and when it immediately enters your large intestine, that happens, if you can feel your body right here, it happens in the lower right-hand corner of your abdomen. So that's where the ileocecal valve is, the valve that connects your small and large intestines. And when it enters the large intestine there, your food is very liquidy. And so as your food or the leftovers of your food, the stuff that you have not absorbed, traverses your large intestine, one of the jobs of the large intestine is to extract water from your digestive tract, from the stuff that you have not digested yet. And as it's traveling along, you go from liquid matter to eventually, we hope, to formed stools. Now, if there's inflammation in the colon or things are just not working right, those transporters are not going to be able to transport the water from the stool back into the body, and you're going to tend to have liquid stool as it comes out. And so if you have diarrhea frequently, you're going to be less likely to have diverticulosis. You get diverticulosis if things aren't moving the way they should be, and that is if your stool kind of gets stuck in your rectum and sigmoid colon. Because what happens is you get poor tone in the rectosigmoid colon. And what that means is you'll get little outpouchings. So those outpouchings, think about a balloon. when you blow up a balloon, when you have a balloon before it's blown up, it's kind of taut and it's kind of hard to stretch. And then once you blow it up, if you let the air out, then it's kind of stretchy and it's easier to stretch. Well, if you push on the sides of your colon too much for too long, if there's stool that sits there for too long, it presses on the sides of the colon and it pooches out. And you get, and as it's pooching out, it affects the nerves and it affects the tone of the muscles. So the muscles can't do their peristalsis as well. And then you get these outpouchings. So if they're not inflamed, that's called diverticulosis. Unfortunately, because there's outpouchings there, food can get stuck there, bacteria can get stuck there, and it can overgrow. And when you get that overgrowth, you can get inflammation. And so when you get that inflammation, that's what diverticulitis is. So what will happen is people with diverticulitis will suddenly get usually bad abdominal pain. And the abdominal pain generally is on the left-hand side. So if you have abdominal pain on the right side, it's more likely to be appendicitis. But if it's on the left-hand side and it's severe, it's more likely to be diverticulitis. That's because diverticulitis happens more frequently in the rectosigmoid colon, which is on the left side of your abdomen. Now, mind you, and this is something to remember, if you have what we call in medicine an acute abdomen, that means that you have extreme pain in your abdomen, it's a medical emergency. Even if you're not sure if it's a medical emergency, it's a medical emergency. It's okay to go to the ER. In fact, you should go to the ER. The reason for that is if you have appendicitis and you have extreme pain, that appendix can rupture. And if it ruptures, it's going to pour. The inside of your abdomen is supposed to be sterile. The inside of your digestive system is not sterile, especially not at that point. In the colon and in the appendix, they're not sterile. They have all kinds of microorganisms in them, but they're not supposed to rupture and open up and dump their contents into your abdomen in general. That is a medical emergency. It can cause peritonitis and can be life-threatening. So if you have extreme abdominal pain, you need to go right to the ER. Again, if the pain is if the problem is diverticulitis, again, if there's enough inflammation, there is a possibility of a rupture of the diverticulum. So that is also a medical emergency. So what usually happens is if you have diverticulitis or diverticulosis, they'll take you. You wind up going to the ER because you are in extreme pain. They do a CAT scan. A CAT scan is an imaging tool. That's really an X-ray, but it's a special kind of X-ray where they're able to take multiple X-rays in sections along the length of something or along a portion of something. So what you're actually looking at tomes. CAT stands for computerized axial tomography. Tomography means you're taking slices. So you're taking very thin slices and you're taking pictures at those very, you're not literally taking slices. It's just an X-ray that's taking an X-ray at a specific spot, and then it moves a millimeter to the left and takes another picture. It moves another millimeter to the left and takes another picture. And it takes a series of X-rays in tomes, which are these little sections. That's what it is. And axial means that that it can turn. Sometimes you just say CT, it's computerized tomography, and it's not necessarily turning. And so you get this CAT scan, and then they can discover if you have diverticulitis or if you have something else going on. And if they determine that that's what's going on, depending how emergent it is, you may have to have surgery. Usually what happens is you get put on IV antibiotics in the hospital, and then you get sent home with more antibiotics to kill off the bacterial infection that's supposedly in your digestive system. So if you come to me and you've just gone through diverticulitis, I'm going to want to find out what your current symptoms are. And you have to handle wherever you're at. Like if you still have pain, then there are different things that we do. And the thing is, if you're taking other things for other reasons, say you have ongoing cardiovascular disease, or if you have joint pain, what you do when you have a digestive upset and you're taking a supplement program, that goes out the window. What you do is is you focus on the digestive system, because you're not going to absorb anything until your digestive system is set right. So you focus on that and you just put things into your body that are going to help you heal. If you have no appetite, it's okay. Your digestive system is upset. You're in stress. You don't want to be eating a lot of food, because that your body has to process that food while it's trying to repair that diverticulum. So what you do is you focus on consuming things that are going to heal your digestive system. One of my favorite things to recommend is bone broth, because bone broth where you take healthy bones. So that's going to be bones from a grass-fed cattle, or it's going to be a cleanly raised pig, or it's going to be wild venison, or it's going to be a free-range organic chicken. So you're going to take the bones from any of those, and you're going to put it in a crock pot, and you're going to cover it in water and heat it to boil for an hour, or heat it on high for an hour, and then heat it on low for 1 to 2 days. I mean it, 1 to 2 days, because then those bones are going to fall apart and you're going to get all that collagenous tissue in a very absorbable form, and you're going to get a lot of nutrients that you can use to help to rebuild the lining of your digestive system. It's very simple. And when you get the bone broth, you eat as much as you can, let your appetite dictate it, and just eat as much as you can. Because if you're bathing that digestive system and all that bone broth, as long as you're doing that, you're sending actual nutrients that your body can use to repair the lining of your gut wall. If you can handle it, then the next thing to send down is probiotics. And it depends on whether you're dairy intolerant or not. My favorite thing to send down is kefir. Kefir has wonderful probiotics in it, and a lot of them, and they persist. In fact, if you weren't consuming kefir before the diverticulitis, maybe you should start, because those wonderful buggies are going to prevent you, help to prevent you from getting diverticulitis. Now, if you have dairy intolerance, then you really can't do kefir unless you get kefir made from another substance. If you can get coconut or almond yogurt kefir, that's a possibility. By the way, yogurt doesn't have as many or as persistent probiotics as kefir does. And so that's why I favor kefir as a food. If you are tolerant to dairy, it's a great way to get probiotics in. And if you're intolerant, you can take pills. And if you take probiotic pills, just make sure they have a good variety of microorganisms in them. And you can take probiotics to help to reseed the colon with good bacteria. And the good bacteria are going to do some activity of cleaning up whatever's going on, the unfriendly bacteria that caused you the diverticulitis in the first place. And they're going to outcompete them. So they're going to grow, and then they're going to do nice things for you. And then the other thing I like to do is I like to send down some kind of digestive antimicrobial. My favorite is berberines, and berberines are great because they're a wonderful antimicrobial, and they're also astringent, so they can help to downregulate some of that inflammation in the digestive system. And because there's pain, another thing to do would be to get some magnesium down there, as long as it didn't irritate you, and figure out an amount of magnesium that you can use. This would be a time where, if you're going to do magnesium, it's a good idea to break out some of those liquid magnesium. So some of those magnesium powders, or use a magnesium liquid, just because if you swallow a pill, you're getting it in what we call a bolus dose. So you're getting a big bolus of the magnesium, and it's not necessarily going to coat the digestive system on its way down. And that's what you'd really like it to do. You want lots of little magnesium molecules just all raining down on the digestive system as they traverse. And that way you get a calmer digestive system, you get one that's going to be less irritated, you get the nerves to function better, and you get good rhythmic peristalsis and you can reduce cramping that way. That's a way to go. I would say that coconut water would be a good way to go too, because that would be a way to stay hydrated, get good electrolytes. It has a high amount of potassium, and potassium also can be nice and calming to that digestive system. So your digestive system is going to be cranky if you have diverticulitis. So the thing to do would be to focus on putting things into your body that are going to reduce inflammation and that are going to be easy on your system. I love the idea of turmeric root. In fact, turmeric, you can throw turmeric root and possibly ginger into the bone broth. And turmeric is a great digestive anti-inflammatory as you send it down. It's a really good idea, and that can go into the bone broth, and that will help to reduce inflammation. The berberines are going to be astringent and antimicrobial, and then you can send things in. Magnesium is going to help to reduce pain and be soothing and have good peristalsis and reduce cramping, and then the ginger and turmeric are going to reduce inflammation. The other thing you can take is marshmallow root. I really like marshmallow root. It's very gentle. It's very mild tasting. They used to flavor marshmallow, the candy, with it. You can get marshmallow root. The way I like to use marshmallow root is have people steep it in the fridge overnight. You'd 1 teaspoon per cup of water, but do steep it overnight in glass so that you're not steeping it in any kind of plastic. That's not an issue. And you put in, it's very easy because you get a glass jar of some kind and 1 teaspoon per cup, and then steep it in the fridge overnight, strain it and drink liberally along with your bone broth. And it's very soothing and healing to the lining of the digestive system. So those are some simple things you can do for diverticulitis. That's unfortunate because diverticulitis can be amazingly painful. And so it's really no fun. And so after having the diverticulitis, you have to look at what could have caused it in the first place and start to address that. If the person has any kind of an immune problem, that can lead to diverticulitis. If the person is eating too much starch and sugar as opposed to healthy, clean protein and lots of produce and not getting enough probiotics in, that can lead to diverticulitis. You have to eat produce and fiber regularly to have regular good contractions in your digestive system. If anything gets bogged down in that rectosigmoid colon, even if you're going to the bathroom every day, if things are just not moving through there, you're going to tend to get those out pouchings. And so you want to be really regular. And the way to make yourself really regular is to eat fiber. And when I say fiber, I do not mean wheat bran. In fact, in general, grains in this situation are going to tend to be inflammatory. I'm not a fan, especially in this situation. Eating grains when you're recovering from a digestive upset, in my opinion, is not a good idea because it just feeds too many of the inflammatory digestive bugs and the digestive flora. And so grains are not what you want to do. You really want the digestive bugs that are going to feed on healthy prebiotic. That's going to be your inulins and the things that are in vegetables and fruit. Vegetables and fruit supply prebiotics, things for your gut flora to eat that are going to promote healthy flora growth. Grains in general, not so much. So what we see over and over again is people with inflammatory conditions in their digestive system, the more grain they eat and the less protein and produce they eat, the worse off they are. So you want to keep things moving through there, and grain just stops you up. The other thing to question is whether you should be eating dairy. Now, I did say kefir, and if you are not dairy intolerant, if you're not intolerant to dairy protein, kefir could be a great thing. If you are, it's not. If you don't do well with dairy protein, like you don't eat cheese because you get digestive upset from it, especially if you get digestive upset from it, but if you get any kind of inflammatory condition from eating cheese, it's not a good idea to have kefir. Then I would go to dairy-free probiotic pills and do it that way. Mind you, I just want to remind you that probiotics, you don't have to take pills to get probiotics. There were no pills in paleo times, and of course, paleo people had probiotics in them. They had to, or they would die. So how do you get probiotics? Well, guess what? They're in the soil. And so when you eat organic produce, you're eating probiotics. There's probiotics that live on all vegetables. That's how you get fermented vegetables. That's how you make sauerkraut. When you make sauerkraut, you don't add anything to it. The Lactobacillus brevis that lives on it just starts fermenting it, and then you get sauerkraut. So that's how you get probiotics. It's a really good thing. All right. So there's your diverticulitis. So big shout out to Michelle and Chuck for calling in. Thank you very much. And hope that was helpful. Anyway. All right. So what I wanted to talk to today is I wanted to talk about exercise today. And there may be a crossover with bicycle talk as well today. But I'm going to start off with exercise. Too much, too little. All right. I think we're going to start with the too little first because that's the more common situation. So if you're listening to this, chances are you don't exercise very much. Why? And I don't mean to be insulting. I don't mean it that way at all. It's just statistically, that's the way it is. And when I see people come in, most of my patients are not getting exercise. They do not prioritize exercise. And it's something that I see in my practice all the time. And, you know, if you're listening, that's likely you, that you know you should be exercising, but you're not getting as much as you so-called should, whatever that means. What amount of exercise should you be getting? Wait for it. You need to get an amount of exercise that makes you happy and healthy, whatever that is. For some people, it's less, and some people, it's more. Some people do well with certain kinds of exercise and not others. So it really depends on the person what sort of exercise they're going to get and how often they're going to do it and how it's going to affect their lives. Which is the best exercise? Wait for it. Again, the one you'll do. That is the best exercise for you. Whichever one you are likely to do is the best one for you. Do you have to do only one form of exercise and focus on it? No. You should do it. Make it easy for yourself. That's the thing to do. So my concern, there is so much that exercise can do for reducing overall mortality and morbidity for so many conditions. So let's talk about a few of those conditions. Let's talk about diverticulitis and diverticulosis. So as we were just talking about it, if you exercise more, you're going to be less likely to get that. How do you get from exercise to less diverticulosis? Well, here's how it goes. When you get regular exercise, you're sending circulation everywhere. So when you exercise, you're revving up your body. So blood circulates through your body many more times because your heart rate is faster. So you're getting blood circulation through your organs of detoxification. You're also getting blood circulation through your kidneys, your liver, which is an organ of detoxification, and your entire digestive system. So things are moving through your digestive system. The more you get blood getting to various areas of your body, the more blood can do its thing. So if you have lovely nutrients in your blood because you've been eating a fabulous diet and you've been taking in some turmeric root and you've been taking in greens and radishes and healthy essential fatty acids from nuts and seeds and olives and fish, those essential fatty acids, if you circulate your blood many more times, they're going to get more opportunities to see lots of cells in your body and come and participate in them. So if you eat a healthy diet and then you go exercise, you're going to get much more rapid delivery of all the nutrients that you put into your body to all of the areas that need it. The other thing is that when you exercise, you create angiogenesis. You make more blood vessels. You have a better blood supply. Your circulation improves. You make more blood vessels, and the blood vessels you have are more efficient and they're cleaner. When you get regular exercise, you make more HDL, high density lipoprotein. High density lipoprotein is a protein that carries cholesterol from your body back to the liver for processing. And so now there's controversy about cholesterol, and there's all kinds of issues with cholesterol. But when you have higher HDL, it has been studied to be cardioprotective. Now, why would that be? Simply because the HDL, which is a protein that carries cholesterol, if it sees an atherosclerotic plaque, that is buildup of calcium, platelets, and cholesterol in your arteries, if you have high HDL, the HDL is going to look at the cholesterol in that plaque and it's going to grab it and take it out of your body. And you'll get a reduction of the size of that plaque, and you may even ultimately get the plaque to go away or not have considerable plaque in your body at all. So when you get exercise, what happens is your body goes, oh my goodness, your body responds. It's so intelligently designed. It's incredible. Your body just responds to what you do. Your body is really great at homeostasis and paying attention to what you do. If your body needs something, if you do something, your body needs something as a result of that, your body will let you know. So as you're exercising, your body adapts to the exercise. So if you go, all right, every day I'm going to do some kind of a bike ride with intervals in it. That's what you do for me. Your body's going to go, okay, we're going to adapt to that. well, gee, you're doing these sprints, so okay, you keep doing these sprints, so we're going to increase your growth hormone, we're going to increase some of your androgens, your testosterone, and we're going to build you bigger muscles so you can handle those sprints better. And if you're going to keep circulating blood this hard and fast, we're going to keep the blood vessels open so that you can do that. And we're going to send out some HDL to clean up the work so you can get that going. Also, simply because there's so much more circulation going on when you get the exercise, everything happens a lot more efficiently and faster. And so it reduces cardiovascular disease. The other thing it does is it reduces your, if you have current diabetes of any kind, whether it's type 1 or type 2, it reduces your need for, if you're type 2, it reduces your need for medications and it reduces your need for insulin if you're insulin dependent. Why? Because it makes you more insulin sensitive. That's one of the adaptations to exercise. Insulin drives sugar into cells. If your body sees that you have a higher need for sugar, it's going to make your cells more sensitive to insulin. Insulin can bond, and because insulin can bond so readily, you don't need to make as much insulin. Having a lot of insulin around, now insulin is not a bad thing. Insulin, you would die without insulin, but having too much insulin can create inflammation because insulin's job is to cause you to grow. It also pushes certain inflammatory compounds. And if you're a person with a disease and you're sedentary, that's not a good thing. You want your insulin to be as low as possible. And if you're resting, you want your insulin to be pretty low. But you want your insulin to participate if you're doing activities, but you want as little of it as possible. It's one of those things that you would like the lowest and most efficient dose possible of insulin. And so when you exercise, your body actually sensitizes the cells to bond to insulin. So more insulin can bond to the cells and you don't need as much insulin. So you have insulin, you increase your insulin sensitivity, and then you don't need as much because your insulin, it just goes, bonds to the cells, opens them up and the gates open up and glucose can get into the cells and run the metabolism of your cells and your activity. And that pulls sugar out of your blood, which keeps your blood sugar lower. Your blood sugar stays lower. The sugar is not as likely to get into all of your tissues and glycate them. What is glycation? Glycation is the process by which sugar attaches to proteins in your body. Proteins are not supposed to be attached to sugar. They are supposed to be on their own. They're supposed to be soft and supple and function the way that they're supposed to. Once you start getting sugar attached to proteins, they become brittle and they break. If that happens in the lens of your eye, you get cataracts. If it happens in your capillaries, depending where the capillaries are, you get black toes that fall off. You get retinopathy. The retina of your eye can make you blind. There's loads of capillaries in your kidneys. You get kidney failure. So these are all problems of diabetes. If you exercise a lot, that's a lot less likely to happen. Of course, if you have type 1 diabetes, you know, that's an autoimmune condition where you have destruction of the islet cells of the pancreas. So you're not able to make insulin, so you have to take it. Now, mind you, if you increase your insulin sensitivity, even as an insulin-dependent diabetic, you don't need as much. Needing less insulin is a good thing because, what did I say? If you have too much insulin around, you have inflammation. People with diabetes, whether type 1, type 2, have a higher risk of cardiovascular disease. Why would that be? It's simple. It's because they have a higher risk of having glycation happen. If you have glycation happening to your arteries are going to become brittle. They're going to be more likely to be able to be damaged with free radicals, and you're going to be more likely to get atherosclerosis, hardening of the arteries. It's very simple. So glycation equals tissue destruction. Guess what else glycation does? It gives you wrinkles. So if you eat too much sugar and you don't get enough exercise, you can get more wrinkly because the sugar will attach to cells in your skin, and then your skin is not as soft and supple and you have wrinkles. And so it goes everything from wrinkles all the way to horrible kidney failure and the need for a kidney transplant, which is not a path you want to go down. So getting exercise can help with that. As I said, so it helps with a couple of biggies, cardiovascular disease and diabetes, two very difficult problems in our society. It helps, of course, it helps with obesity. If you get your weight down, and obesity all by itself is not as much of a problem. Although, you know, it can be argued that if somebody's very overweight, there's going to be stress on joints. And so you're going to be more likely to have problems in your joints for a few reasons if you're obese. One reason is simply the load, that if you're bearing an extra 100 pounds on your knees are going to have trouble supporting it. Your knees weren't designed for you to be 100 pounds overweight. They were designed for you to be whatever the normal body weight for you is. Your knees are going to support you better if you get regular exercise, because your ligaments and tendons and your muscles are going to support those knees better, and you'll have better support. And then if the ligaments, muscles, and tendons around the knees are strong and healthy, then the joint itself doesn't have to work as hard supporting your body and your weight. So your weight itself can be a factor in load-bearing, but in load-bearing joints, especially your knees and your hips. And ultimately your spine as well, especially the lumbar spine. Lumbar spine's the epicenter of your body. It's basically where your center of gravity is. And, you know, your pelvis, L4 through S1, your fourth lumbar, fifth lumbar, and your first sacral vertebrae. Good times. They're problematic for most people. But if you're overweight, they're going to be that much more of a problem. The other thing to know about obesity is that contained within fat, your body protects you from stuff with your fat, and it will deposit toxins and inflammatory compounds into your body fat, which is why sometimes when people are losing weight, they don't feel well, because they're actually releasing toxins, stored toxins. So if you're doing a lot of weight loss, it's a good idea to be drinking a lot of water, eating a lot of detoxifying vegetables like your beets, carrots, lemons, artichokes, and perhaps take some milk thistle. So that help your liver to function better as you're doing the fat loss. And that's why it's also a good idea to do fat loss slowly. It's not a good idea to go on crash diets and lose 10 pounds in 2 weeks. Bad idea. Much better to lose a pound or two at a time, because then you release the toxin slowly and your organs of detoxification don't get backed up. All right. So exercise reduces morbidity. And so the other thing I want to remind you of is that exercise, you can't out-exercise a bad diet. That, in fact, fat loss is 70% in the kitchen and 30% exercise. But if you don't do the 30%, you're losing 30%. And it's not a good idea not to move. That you need to move. Getting exercise is good for you, and we were not designed to sit around and not be active. And again, what kind of active you are is entirely up to you. You can make a huge amount of life changes with walking. My mother, Ronnie Storch, who lives in Venice, Florida, she walks, and my mother is fit and healthy, and she's 77 years old. She walks every day with my puppy brother, Nico, who is he's an Italian water dog, and they walk around the neighborhood. Some days she walks for over an hour if she feels like it. Some days she walks for less than that. It depends what else she's got going on, because she's really busy. And, of course, she has to walk Nico at night, too, but she doesn't go out for as long in the evening, because it's evening. So, but my mother is at a healthy weight for her. She's, she's a little over 5 feet tall, and she probably weighs 130, 140 pounds. She's very fit and healthy for a 77-year-old lady. She's doing great. And she walks, and that is her form of exercise. She doesn't ride a bike like I do. She doesn't go to the gym. She doesn't even do yoga. I mean, she could, but she doesn't. But she walks, and she's great. And so what I'm saying to you is simple walking can do it for you, but you also have to put in the work in the kitchen. And that is so important too. So the other thing that exercise reduces mortality and morbidity for is mood. So if you have anxiety or depression, exercise is incredible. I think that the reason I'm in good shape in terms of my mental emotional state, now I'm definitely an anxious person and I have to work on my anxiety. I get very worried about things. My mind's always got a million things on it. And I do have to watch my anxiety levels, but I feel like my exercise, that's my SSRI. Instead of taking Lexapro or Celexa or, you know, name your SSRI, Zoloft, I don't know. Instead of taking those drugs, I exercise. And I really have to wonder if I didn't exercise, if I would need antidepressants or anti-anxiety medication, because there's certainly mental illness in my family. And so what I want to say to you is if you have anxiety or depression and you haven't added exercise to what you're doing, it's going to be very difficult for you because it does so many wonderful things for you. Again, very simply, if you're eating a good diet and you're running all those nutrients through your body over and over, you're going to get better delivery of those great nutrients. For the brain, you need essential fatty acids, especially DHA, docosahexaenoic acid, because your brain is mostly made of fat, and that you need fatty tissue to have good functioning cell membranes, cell membranes over the nerves. The nerves are little electrical wires, and they have action potentials going all the time. So in order for them to be healthy and well insulated, you need a lot of fat, and you need good fat. And the fat comes from fish and fish oil, to some extent nuts and seeds and produce, but especially clean protein has good essential fatty acids in it. If you eat 100% grass-fed beef, 100% grass-fed beef has DHA and EPA in it and will help you with your cardiovascular health as well as your brain health. If you eat fish regularly or take fish oil, you can get good brain health from that. It's going to help to shore up the strength of the cell membranes of all of your nerves, your nerve cells, your neurons, and they are going to function better. And when they function better, you're not going to have these highs and lows of neurotransmitters, and your mood is going to tend to be more even. So when you get exercise, you get great delivery of those nutrients. You get more circulation. Whenever you get more circulation to your brain, you feel better. Let me give you an interesting example. Beet juice. So beets and beet juice. Beets are neat because they have compounds in them, betalins and other cool stuff, that increase your nitric oxide. Nitric oxide is a compound that causes vasodilation. So when you have vasodilation, some neat stuff happens. You get improved circulation and your blood pressure goes down. So beet juice is one of the things I recommend to my patients who have high blood pressure. Now, athletes use beets and beet juice too. And how they use it is you'll take a shot of beet juice before your exercise. And a lot of times when you go to exercise, I know this happens to me, and I've talked to professional athletes and, you know, very high level athletes and people who are just amateurs, people who mostly walk for exercise. When you first start out your workout, whatever it is, you're like, I don't feel like it. And most people go through that to some extent. I find, and of course I do too, you know, I'm like, oh, I have to do this whole workout. Oh no. And then once I get into the workout, maybe 10 or 15 minutes into the workout, I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm good. I can do this. I'm doing it and I'm into it. And that feeling goes away. What's going on there is you've gone from, you know, a much lower activity level to a much higher one in a short period of time. And you have to get the circulation to your brain, and your brain needs to have more circulation to get into the exercise. So when you take beets or beet juice, you get this shot of nitric oxide inducing substances, and you get more circulation to your brain quicker. So your body's like, oh, okay, I'm here. I'm ready to go. I'm good to go. And that feeling of, all right, I'm ready to go, comes a lot sooner. I find that sometimes, if I do the beet juice 20 minutes before the workout, when I go to start the workout, I'm like, all right, I'm ready to go. It's a really cool thing. And you can buy just plain old beet juice at the store. You can get powdered beet juice and you know, hydrate it. They sell beet juice that has flavors in it. And one of my favorites is beet juice that's mixed with cherry. You know, plain beet juice is okay. You know, it's all right. It tastes like beets. Although I really enjoy having beets in my salad, and I really enjoy steamed beets, and I really enjoy pickled beets. You know, I really have come to enjoy beets. And then juiced beets, beets that are part of a green juice, I love that. You know, if you get a nice juice, if you go to your favorite juice place or you make your own juice and you juice beets along with greens and turmeric and cayenne, with a little bit of you know, if you want a little bit of pineapple juice for flavor or some kind of other fruit juice, but try not to do too much of the fruit juice. The beets in there, it's just tremendous. So good for you. I personally have an affinity for beets, so that they work really well for me. But it helps you to want to exercise more in the moment. They're really interesting. So anyway, if you have a mood disorder, whether it's PTSD or bipolar disorder or anxiety or depression, exercise can help to mitigate that. So getting yourself some kind of regular exercise can be really helpful. So for goodness sakes, how do you get started exercising? So one of the things you have to do is you have to sit down with yourself and decide, what do I want to do? And I would say, just as a way of advice, if you're not sure what to do, just start out by going for a walk, because you don't need anything special. Just wear some clothes that you're going to feel comfortable in going outside, and wear some shoes that you're going to feel comfortable in. I mean, before you go investing in, you know, good walking shoes or whatever, just look around the house and see what the best pair of shoes for walking that you have is. Throw those on and go outside and go for a walk, and walk as fast or as slow as you want to. One of the things you have to do before you get into some kind of a program is you have to get used to the idea of doing it at all. So what I recommend to people is when they're starting to exercise, don't worry about how hard, how fast, how far. Just do it. Just get out there and do it. So if you're just starting your exercise and you're starting out by walking and you're not very fit, it's okay. If you keep exercising, you will get fitter. If you can only manage a 5 or 10 minute walk to start, then do that. It's fine. And if you don't want to do it every day, don't. The other thing I want to point out is that exercise doesn't have to be done all at once. Exercise can be done in bite-sized pieces throughout the day, that you can do exercise. You can do a 10-minute walk in the morning and a 10-minute walk in the evening. You can do 4 or 5-minute walks if you want to, and then you've racked up 20 minutes during your day. It does add up over time, and that's absolutely fine, figuring out which thing to do. So getting started is a great way to do it. Now, if you're getting to be a little bit more advanced and you want to up your game, then a good thing to do is to look around and see what else there is out there that you might be interested in. Do you have a piece of apparatus in your house that you want to use that you haven't used? Are you looking at the apparatus going, boring? Well, a thing to do there would be to go on your computer and see if there's a YouTube or some kind of an app that you can sign up for, and they'll have workouts for you. There's no charge workouts on YouTube and other places on the internet. And sometimes there are many places you can sign up for classes on your computer, and then you can use your apparatus. So that's something to figure out. And you can also just look online and see if there are specific workouts that you might want to try on the apparatus you already have. That way someone else does the thinking for you and you can just follow that workout. Another nice thing to do is to go patronize your local gym establishment, whichever one is close to you. So if you're going to join a gym, the thing to do is to make it easy for yourself. People more successfully show up at the gym if the gym is either near their home or near their office. So whichever time of day you're more likely to exercise, that's the gym that you want to join. You know, you've got to make it easy for yourself. If there's a fantastic gym, but it's 20 miles away and you're unlikely to get yourself there, it doesn't pay to do it. Or if you really want to be in your town and you work 20 miles from home, if you join the gym at work and you're feeling like, oh, I'm still stuck out here in Weathersfield or wherever, then you may not want to join the gym in Weathersfield. However, for some people, it's better for them to roll out of work in Weathersfield and go right to the gym and then go home. That works for some people. If that's you, then that's a thing to look at. But make it as easy as possible. You're most likely to go if it's close to your home or close to your business or close to somewhere you go. And then just spend some time going into your gym and walking around and seeing what's available. There's very nice staff there. They're often willing to help you, and they can help you to get acquainted with apparatus. There's often classes that you can take. The nice thing about classes, Some people don't like classes because they don't want to be told what to do. They want to do things at their own pace. And some people do like classes. The neat thing about classes is you don't have to think. You've got an instructor telling you what to do. Some people have issues with being told what to do, so they don't want to do the class. I get it. So you have to figure out what works for you any which way. The more flexible you are, and I don't mean flexible in your body, I mean flexible in your mind, the more flexible you are with what you're willing to do, the more success you're going to have because, you know, you're going to be open to whatever's being offered. So for me, I have success because I have figured out how to exercise by myself. I figured out how to exercise with other people, and I figured out what to do in a gym. Sometimes I take classes and sometimes I exercise on my own. But I'm unusual because I'm highly motivated. And getting from, you know, being sedentary to being highly motivated is a process, and it's not going to happen yesterday. So don't worry about it. It's okay. Like I said, the place to start is to go easy. Before you even do anything, it's a good idea to, because if it's overwhelming to you, when you're overwhelmed, a good thing to do is to figure out what's overwhelming to you, is to face whatever it is that's overwhelming you. So if you're overwhelmed by the idea of going to the gym, a little cognitive behavior therapy is a good idea. You go to the gym and look around and don't put pressure on yourself to even do anything. Look around and see what you might like to do when you get to the gym. And you can even make a list. Oh, I might like to try that. I might like to try this. I might like to try that. Have somebody at the gym give you a tour and make suggestions to you. And that would be a great place to start. And then in terms of whatever else you might want to do, there's other ways to make it easy for yourself to exercise. As I said, your computer, your box that you have attached to your TV, whether it's your Roku, your PlayStation, your Apple TV, you name it, or even just your cable service or your satellite service, will have workouts on there. There are things you can subscribe to that are like a home gym, that are classes that you can do off your computer. You can have a big computer screen and you can work out in front of them, and you can sign up for, it's like joining a gym, and it can be roughly the same price as joining a gym. And you can do workouts from your home. That there are, I think one thing that's available is that people in other parts of the country, or people not at your house, wherever, they're filmed teaching workouts, and you get to go to the class virtually, just like they have virtual classes for college, where you have a professor who's sitting in Oregon teaching you a class at Wesleyan. And you can, I think that exists here, where they film, Jenna teaching her spin class in Los Angeles, and you've got an app that allows you to see Jenna, and you're actually, you've got your own spin bike in your house, and you're taking Jenna's class online. So that's a thing you could do. Like I said, there's so many ways to make it easier. There are no end of apps that are going to help you with exercise and what exercises to do, whether you want to do resistance training. And I do like the idea of resistance training. Again, resistance training is really great for you because you build muscle mass. It helps with obesity. It helps with morbidity, mortality, mood, cardiovascular disease, you name it. It helps with all kinds of things. But before you do resistance training, you have to figure out what you want to do, what you are likely to do, because starting exercise and putting it into your life can be daunting, and we don't want you to be daunted. We want you to be dauntless, like in that movie, Divergent, right? Yeah, so, and there's a marina in Essex called Dauntless too. Anyway, we want you to find an exercise that you can do. I'm very good at amusing myself. You want to find an exercise that you're willing to do that makes you feel inspired. And, you know, if you start out too much too soon, you're not going to stay with it. So you want to go at a level that works for you. Now, if you're one of those people who has kids in a commute and you feel like you have nowhere to put exercise, for you, what you're looking at is 5-minute random exercise bursts. So that's one thing you can fit into your day. Usually you have 5 minutes somewhere, whether it's during your lunch break at work, whether it's right before you get in the door at work, whether it's right after you put your kids to bed, whether it's right before you go pick up your kids. we're talking 5 minutes, do some squats, do pick up some weights, do some walking in place, do a little walk around, you know, your yard. But 5 minute exercise bursts, and they don't have to be all at the same time. That's the other thing I want to emphasize. When you exercise, you don't have to plan a half hour walk into your day. You can do five minute whatevers in your day. And that's, again, something you could do from an app, from your computer. Like right now, you could go to your computer and look up an exercise you would like to do, and somebody's on there with a YouTube or some other kind of video, and you can do it. And so it's an easy way to do it. And just don't put pressure on yourself until it becomes a habit. Make it something that you want to do for yourself to help with your healing. And, you know, that and let yourself know that it is something you can do. It's just a matter of figuring out the way that's going to be the most efficient and work for you. People tend not to prioritize exercise because it takes time. Anything that takes time can be difficult for people if people are crunched for time. And if you're anything, if you're not the 1%, you're probably crunched for time. And even, you know, people who are overworked in the 1%, they can be crunched for time too. But, you know, the more money you have, and this is a generalization, the more money you have, the more choices you have of what to do with your time. And one of the great things that money buys is time. You have leisure time. You have more time in your day to do the things that you want to do. And when you're chasing the buck, you have less time. That's just the nature of it. So the further down you go on the income scale, the more that's a problem. And so finding the time in your day is hard to do. And it is something you can do. It is, people do it. So figuring out how to do that and stick with it is something that you want to look at in your life and be willing to do. Because like I said, there's so many conditions that exercise is helpful for, and the big ones that it's really helpful for, cardiovascular disease, whatever your cardiovascular illness is, whether it's cardiomyopathy, whether it's valve disease, whether it's atherosclerosis, hardening of the arteries, whether it's high cholesterol, whether it's high blood pressure, exercise helps all of those. Exercise especially helps diabetes, whether you have type 1 or type 2, whether you're insulin dependent or not. It helps with mortality and morbidity from diabetes. If you're type 2 diabetic or you're pre-diabetic, you can reverse it with diet and exercise. You don't necessarily have to take drugs to reverse your diabetes. It's all about watching your sweets and starches and getting your exercise and getting that balance in. I didn't talk about cancer, but you have a lower cancer risk when you get exercise simply because you're cranking your immune system more. Again, if you're eating good food and you're pushing nutrients to all of the cells in your body, more of your body is going to see antioxidants. If you're ingesting antioxidants from produce and from good quality produce, and you're ingesting essential fatty acids, you're going to be less inflamed because the blood is circulating through your body many more times. And things like turmeric, the antioxidants in turmeric, the antioxidants in all of your berries, the antioxidants in your leafy greens, in all of your vegetables, are going to cycle around. Antioxidants don't just clean up free radicals, those stray electrons that have gone off and broken away from their original sources. Free radicals and antioxidants also moderate gene function. So if you have a gene that's malfunctioning and starting to make abnormal cells, turmeric and resveratrol and polyphenols and proanthocyanidins, all those wonderful antioxidants, vitamin C, vitamin E, beta carotene, and other carotenoids, they can all shut that down. So the more you eat of that stuff, and the more your blood circulates so it sees more parts of your body, and the more circulation you have from exercise, the healthier you're going to be. You're going to be less likely to get cancer. That's how that goes. If you reduce your diabetes, reducing your blood sugar makes you less likely to get cancer. The more sugar you have around, the higher your blood sugar is, the more inflammation you have, the more damage to cells and genes you have, the more likely you are to get cancer. So diabetes is a risk factor for cancer, unfortunately. Having high blood sugar is a risk factor for cancer. I don't know if it's a quantified risk factor, but intellectually it makes sense. So getting your blood sugar in check is a really good idea. So it's a really good idea to get regular exercise. And so, you know, I hope we gave you some ideas of how to figure out how to do that. So we focused this week on not getting enough exercise. And at some point, we are going to talk about the opposite side, which is overtraining. Now, when we're talking about overtraining, we're talking to a smaller audience, obviously, because most of you are not getting enough exercise. That's, and again, don't be embarrassed. I know. I hear it all the time. I talk to my patients. They're not getting regular exercise. And don't feel like, oh my goodness, I'm doing the wrong thing. I'm a failure. Don't even go there. It's okay. There's a reason why you're not exercising, and it has to do with the way society is structured, making it so that we wind up having to work a lot and long hours and care for children, and we don't have extended families. There's a lot of reasons why. There's a lot of social reasons why people don't get exercise. We also live in the suburbs and we have cars, and so we don't walk to get from here to there. And if you go to Europe, where people tend to be less obese and have less of that kind of morbidity, you see that they walk everywhere, and you see that there's less obesity and there's less diabetes. There's less of a lot of things because they don't have cars like we have. We have inexpensive cars and we have relatively inexpensive gas, which they don't have in other places in the world. So anyway, figure out what exercise is right for you. And you can, this is something you can do. I have faith in you. You can do it. So I hope this was helpful. And if you want to listen to this again, you can listen to this on podcast. So you have been listening to Radio Naturopath. I am Fran Storch. This is a call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I'm a naturopathic physician. And you can email me at any time at radionaturopath@gmail.com with questions or comments. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can listen to our podcast at www.whus.org and go to the talk header and click on Radio Naturopath. You can also check out my Facebook page, Fran Storch ND, Naturopathic Physician, Radio Naturopath, or follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Fran Storch ND. This has been Radio Naturopath here on 91.7 FM, WHUS Storch.